Welcome to The Quantum Pod, a podcast by Zapata. Waiting is not an action, and play to win, not just to not lose, are big themes with today's guest, Andy Walter. All right, welcome to today's Quantum Pod. I have with me in the pod, Andy Walter, who is the former SVP of IT at Procter & Gamble. Andy, thanks for stopping into the Quantum Pod.
Awesome, super excited to join you today.
Awesome, okay, so we do this with all of our guests. This is your pod today, so set the stage for us. What's in the pod with you?
Yeah, well, what's in the pod with me is, my pod is a road racetrack. Because just yesterday, I was at Putnam Park Roadways Raceway, just outside of Indianapolis, in a Ford GT vintage race car, doing the shakedown. So that's in my pod.
Wow. Okay. I think we're going to talk more about that later. So let's do the rapid fire questions first. Okay. Right. What do you personally find most interesting about quantum computing?
Well, you know, for me, it's the future. You know, so I was 26 years with Procter & Gamble, worked in technology from the end of the mainframes all the way through to the cloud computing. So I saw these massive changes in how we thought about computing and how we thought about, you know, solving some of the world's wicked problems. And what excites me most is this is going to totally open up new doors to problems we can now solve that we couldn't solve before. So that's what excites me most about quantum computing.
Awesome. And maybe a little bit related, but what do you think is the most revolutionary aspect of quantum?
Well, the science behind it is phenomenal, you know, so it's, you know, I get geeked out sometimes just thinking about it, but I'll tell you what, you know, what it really comes down to for me though, is being able to deal with massive amounts of data and do computing on them like we weren't able to do before, you know, so again, I remember back to the, you know, 2007, 2008, 2009, when big data was just starting to hit the ground, you know, and we were all kind of excited about being able to bring data sets together we'd never been able to do before, but we were still limited. And quantum is just going to blow the doors off this thing as far as the type of data we can bring together and the computing power needed to do some really, really interesting things. And passionate for me is, you know, I'm also on the board of the Ovarian Cancer Alliance of Greater Cincinnati, and I truly believe that some of the world's toughest health problems like ovarian cancer, breast cancer, and the likes are going to be solved with things like quantum computing. Because when you think about the data sets, when you're talking about millions of MRIs or things like that, the computing power needed to, you know, crunch these things and find the trends, find the anomalies, all that type of stuff, is going to happen with quantum computing. I truly believe that.
A while back, I had the privilege of having Christopher Savoy, CEO of Zapata, on my own podcast, Quantum Computing Now, to talk about just this, life sciences. I'll put a link to that in the show notes in case you want to go give that a listen. But last question before we jump into the real stuff. Tell us more about your vintage race car. That sounds really fascinating.
Yeah, no, it's kind of one of these passions that, you know, started from, you know, the analytics journey. I was involved in P&GI. So I led the analytics transformation at Procter & Gamble back in 2010. And we really kind of applied it across all parts. But when we started seeing of like who was doing analytics really interesting, and we tried to learn from not just people in our industry, but from across industries. So we got to visit McLaren Formula One and see how they were doing analytics. And then when I retired from Procter & Gamble and started working with disruptive innovators, I started working with folks that, you know, were seeing more in this. So got to go to a couple of Formula One races and the like, and saw how folks were applying analytics and technology into this racing world. And, you know, one thing unfortunately led to another, and I found myself building a vintage race car. So 2006 Ford GT, so of the Ford Ferrari fame. And then also made it part of my charity effort as well. So it's the Teal Power GT, and we'll race it and raise awareness, but also have a lot of fun doing it. So you know, nothing like going 200 miles an hour, you know, for a great cause.
Oh, absolutely. That's everybody's dream. Okay, so let's dive into the real stuff now. Let's start off by you're here to talk about waiting is not an action, is sort of the theme of this. Tell us a bit about what does that mean?
Yeah, so it's, it applies to not just, quantum computing and what a lot of us are doing professionally, but it applies also personally. So, after, retiring from Procter & Gamble and also unfortunately, my first wife passed from ovarian cancer. That's why I'm so involved in the cause. People kept telling me, Andy, you need to write a book. This journey you've been on has been phenomenal. So I wrote this book called Waiting is Not an Action. And the whole concept is, when you think of your personal life, your professional life, or what you're trying to achieve financially, whatever it might be, there's so many people that are trapped playing not to lose. They're stuck just going through the motions. They're stuck, doing things the way it's always been done in the past. And I got some very great counsel from my very first manager at Procter & Gamble all the way back in, December 1992. So a long, long time ago. And I was in his office giving him updates. And I said, I'm waiting on this and I'm waiting on this and I'm waiting on this. And abruptly, he ended the meeting and he kicked me out of his office, effectively kicking me out of his office and said, Andy, come back when you're going to do something because waiting is not an action. And that stuck with me the whole time, and kind of had this sense of urgency of what's next and are we really exploring what's next? So in the context of quantum computing, just like what happened with the internet when, it started, or just like what happened with big data and cloud computing, there's an awful lot of people that kept going, that's far into the future. I don't have to worry about that. And I believe that's completely wrong. I think, those folks are going to find that waiting is going to cost them. It's going to cost their company. It's going to cost, a whole bunch of different things. So it's like, how do you embrace these disruptive innovations and stop sitting there going, okay, I'm just going to keep waiting because I can wait 5 years, 10 years, whatever it might be. And I don't believe that's the case. So the context of the book was all around that of accelerating your career, but also taking that same mindset to your life as well.
Yeah. And so maybe get your opinion on this, if it's a fair rephrasing of waiting is not an action, because I've heard it said that you're always making a decision. And sometimes the decision is not to make a decision, to sort of be tossed about by whatever happens. Is that similar or a good rephrasing?
Yeah, I think it's always looking forward. It's looking at what are the building blocks I need to be doing right now that are going to set up the future. So if let's, we can talk about whether personal or professional. On the personal side, what are you trying to achieve 5 to 7 years from now? And are you doing the building blocks now that are going to help you be successful in that? If you believe quantum computing is coming, and I think most people believe it is, well, what are the building blocks you're doing right now to be able to take advantage of it? And are you really focused on the right things or not? I was fortunate, to also help P&G on the journey to leveraging the internet. And I brought in and installed the first World Wide Web server in P&G on my Windows 3.0 machine. so that dates it a little bit, obviously. But then started working on a prototype of what if we could connect all the R&D researchers around the world, leveraging this brand new thing called the World Wide Web, but inside the walls of P&G. What if we could connect them with all the knowledge, all the innovation we had done over 100 years and put that at the fingertips of our top researchers around the world, 6,000 researchers, help them operate as if they were in one building. So a lot of people were saying, this World Wide Web thing, it's going to go away. What I did was say, well, maybe it's not, and maybe we can embrace it on some of our wicked problems today. And it was in the very early stages of that whole transition, and then it just accelerated from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And acceleration is something that we've been seeing in quantum a lot. So specifically for quantum computing, if waiting is not an action, maybe what is an action?
Well, for me, it would be starting to think about what are the problems that we're working on today or the problems we'd like to be able to solve? So again, at Procter & Gamble, if you think about a traditional R&D, we would have a top 10 list of what are the 10 wicked problems we're trying to solve and try to create visibility on those. So when I think about quantum computing, I would say, what are the problems I wish I could solve today, but either we can't because we can't bring the data together or we don't have the computing power to do it. You know, we have an, you know, so let's have that list. Let's publicize that list across our organization. And let's be thinking about, you know, again, like, you know, obviously what you guys are trying to do with quantum computing is like, hey, how can you develop and work on these problems today with a mindset that the quantum devices are going to keep coming, they're going to keep changing. And if I can develop with that end in mind, you know, I have the potential to be on the lead of this quantum computing thing. You know, I joke a lot about in the book around, you know, another big trend that a lot of people thought were going to go away, and that was e-commerce. You know, so e-commerce hits in the early 2000s, and then the whole dot-com bubble burst, right? And the web vans of the world died. And I'll tell you what, there were an awful lot of leaders that said, see, I told you this thing was never going to work. It's going away. I don't have to worry about it more. I can go back to just shipping full trucks to Walmart and everybody's happy.
Hi there, Ethan from the editing room here. I'm jumping in because in the interview, Andy went on here to talk about his role in the e-commerce transition at P&G, but I think that it's just the perfect way to end this episode. So if you're curious about what he's going to say and how e-commerce relates to quantum, make sure you stick around to the end to find out. For now, let's hear what Andy had to say about getting started with quantum today as the field is still growing, which just so happens to be exactly what we've designed Orchestra for.
And then what are the technologies, what are the capabilities we can start working on today such that as these devices become more and more available, you know, over the next, you know, 1, 5, 10 years, whatever it might be, we're going to keep seeing that. Are you working with a capability that easily allows you to take advantage of that as it unfolds? It's the exact same thing I've seen over and over again through my career of these disruptive new innovations. How do you start taking advantage of them and set it up so that you can win? And that to me is playing to win versus playing not to lose. Yeah. You know, are you going to play to win on quantum computing, or are you going to wait and hope that you can catch up later?
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that maybe some of the concerns from people who are more on the playing not to lose side, or they want to play to win, but they're worried that at least with quantum computing, everything changes so fast, and we don't even know what the technology is going to look like. You know, how do we plan for something 10 years down the road if we don't know if it's going to be ion traps or superconducting? So what would you say to that?
Yeah. Well, I think you do have to take that into account, right? So it's like, I'm not, at this point, I wouldn't be, just as we weren't in, you know, 1993 banking the entire company on the World Wide Web, or in 2003 banking. We didn't say, okay, you know, Walmart and Tesco and other retailers, we're going to stop working with you because the future is e-commerce and we're going to win there. We help them win there too. You know, so I think you think about like, how do you evolve your business model over time, taking advantage of something like this, realizing again, when we started this and, you know, that e-commerce journey in 2003, 2004, Amazon didn't exist. Not as it exists today.
Yeah.
So we didn't know the Amazon device was going to be there. We didn't know that, you know, all these different e-commerce players around the world, we didn't know that the players in China were going to be there to take advantage of. We didn't know that there was going to be a Amazon Prime Day or a, you know, day in China that, you know, could sell billions of dollars worth of product in one day. We had no idea that was going to be there, but we had to start thinking about how do we get our enterprise ready? And that's some fundamental things like, okay, we're not going to be shipping truckloads. We're now going to be shipping individuals. So when you think about quantum computing, you start saying, okay, great. How are we bringing together our data sets together today? And how are we going to have to take advantage of them if these quantum devices start showing up? What is our development platform? How are we developing our internal solutions such that if, you know, we may be plugging in cloud computing today, or we may be plugging in on-premise computing today, are we working with a platform that allows us to plug in devices as they become available in the quantum world? And whatever, what might that look like?
Okay, I have to jump in here again because I just want to assure you, our incredible listener, that we did not tell Andy to say that, but he just perfectly described Orchestra, our quantum orchestration platform. That's no surprise since we're building Orchestra to fit our customers' needs, and those enterprise customers are people like Andy in his past roles. I'll put a link to learn more in the show notes.
You know, I think there's always a risk of like, how do you avoid getting stuck in the hype cycle of these new technologies and jump towards the end of the hype cycle, which is basically people finding real use cases that we could take advantage of this today if these devices become available. And the power of that then is, if you're a large corporation today, are you helping shape what devices are going to be most relevant to your journey? So that was the one thing that I always wanted to do in working with these disruptive innovators in the outside is like, well, if I start working today with them, I can help shape the future such that it's a win for my company as well, you know, versus just letting it happen and then hope later I can figure out how to plug into it.
Yeah, absolutely. We've done a survey commissioned by Zapata, and there have been other surveys that have pointed to people saying that the time to start seriously looking at quantum computing is now. How does that align or not align with your thinking on the subject and what you're hearing from your network?
Yeah, everything I'm hearing right now is the early time to be looking at this thing. Again, back to some of the elements of like, what problems do you wish you could solve today that you can't? Before big data, we would have loved to have been able to bring all the data sets together to be able to recommend a product for an individual store in India. Yeah, so there's millions of individual small stores in India, millions of small individual stores in China. Before big data and before some of the AI capabilities that are available now, we had no way to do that. And then suddenly, but that was a problem we had identified that said, we would love to be able to do this because that we think if we're able to do this, we'll actually be able to increase incremental sales by stores significantly by putting the right products in the right stores, for consumers to embrace. So we started identifying some of these wicked problems that we would love to have been able to solve. With quantum computing, now's the time to be start doing that. So again, it's, do you have your innovation team starting to look at this? Do you have your analytics and data science team starting to look at this? So again, let's start identifying what are the problems that we would love to be able to solve and then be able to solve them in small cases, So again, back to all these technology transformations that happened over the last, 30 years that, so many people discarded as this is never going to work. This is never going to play out to the few people that, embraced it early and got a head start. This is the time to get that head start, in the quantum space as well.
Yeah. Okay, I wanted to go back to what you said about you built up your own infrastructure for the World Wide Web, and you wanted to help your partners like Walmart, come into e-commerce and that all of that. Which I want to ask sort of about maybe the flip side of that, which is that's sort of you being an external partner to someone else. Does it make sense to have external partners helping you along, especially in something like quantum computing?
Yeah, I'm a huge, huge believer in that the best way to drive breakthrough areas forward is with partners from the outside, and you'll notice that every time I'm talking, I never use the word supplier. I never use the word vendor. I always use the word partner because what I'm looking for is strategic partners that can help me along on the journey. And I want to bring my top people together with their top people to be working on the problem together. In the last 2 years at Procter & Gamble, I got very externally focused because there was so much disruptive innovation going on. And I reflect on that and realize that, by getting more externally focused, by working with these disruptive innovators across technology areas, across analytics, across all these different things, I created more value in the last 2 years at Procter & Gamble than I did in the previous 8 years combined. So this idea of working with strategic partners who are bringing the best thinking together, not just on a topic area like cloud computing or analytics or even what we're talking about here today, you know, but they're working across industries. You know, so if I stay insular and say, okay, great, I'm going to work on quantum computing inside my company alone, and I'm going to try to work this, you know, with my own people, I'm not going to get the advantage of, you might be working with healthcare, you might be working with the financial industry, you might be working with, you know, governments, you might be working with the entertainment industry. I want to get the learning from all those groups. The best way for me to do that is to work with leaders, you know, that are really bringing the latest thought leadership and thinking to this, like Zapata.
Do you have any examples you can share where P&G partnered with another organization, maybe like you were talking about in those last 2 years you were there?
Yeah, no. And I've got numerous examples where we partnered with, you know, external partners to bring breakthrough new capabilities to the world. You know, so it's, you know, big and small. So we've got our big traditional partners, and we did great innovation with Accenture and Infosys and others. You know, with Infosys, a great example, we worked with them on a capability to connect with all of our distributors around the world and bring all that data together so that we could start doing analytics AI on it. And they called it something called Trade Edge. And we co-innovated that with them. You know, they invested, we invested, we built this capability. Yeah, it was really fun because just a month ago, I was in Chicago at an analytics conference, and the people were there from Infosys, and they said, Andy, this is now a $200 million business for us. So we co-innovated, we created enormous value at Procter & Gamble, still using it there. And they've also created an external business by co-innovating with us. So it was a win-win-win. With small disruptive innovators, we did the same thing. You know, we worked with small players in the analytics space, whether it was Fractal Analytics, whether it was Varex and others, where we would work on wicked problems together, bring their best people together. You know, so like with Varex, now they're focused more on life sciences, pharmaceuticals, AI. But with Varex, we as Procter & Gamble actually took an equity stake in them. And we worked on a out-of-stock capability AI model that we then scaled across multiple retailers and multiple businesses around the world. And then they commercialized it with external players as well and continue to build their platform around that. So I think there's lots of different models where you can work with partners, big partners and small partners, to not only help your company win, but help them win. Because then if they're winning, they continue to innovate, they continue to invest and all those type of things. You know, and I think that's what we're going to need in this whole space of quantum computing is like, what are the partnerships that can come together to really make a difference? And early in my career, or even before my time at Procter & Gamble, you know, the industry came together with this little thing called the barcode that put on every product. And it was a whole bunch of retailers and brand owners come together to eliminate friction in the industry and create a model that allowed everyone to win more and grow more and make it work for consumers and things like that. You know, those type of models are happening over and over again. And I think the same can happen in this space.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay. I wanted to go back to talking about, you know, you said that this is the very early time to get into quantum computing. Maybe what are some of the signs that a company should be moving deeper and deeper into quantum computing? Maybe some signs that they should maybe learn more first. Maybe their action should, instead of, you know, don't wait around, but your action should be learn about the space before diving in.
Yeah, I think with any technology, there's some really early signs that you should be looking for that, hey, this has the potential to be a big disruptor. And I need to be part of this. And there's lots of different ways to be part of this. I'll come back to that. What are the signs? The signs are lots of patents being filed in a particular area. You know, so one of the things we always did, you know, in our time at Procter & Gamble was looking at like, where is a lot of innovation happening and what spaces, and are those areas that are of interest to us, whether they were product patent areas or technology patent areas. And I think what you're starting to see is, in the quantum computing, there's a lot happening in this space.
In case you're like me and you want cold, hard data on everything before making a decision, I've put a link to an excellent report from the Quantum Economic Development Consortium in the show notes showing exactly what Andy's talking about here. The number of patents filed in quantum is accelerating over time.
Second is people are starting to identify some early problems, proof of concepts that look really interesting in the technology area. So they're starting to talk about being able to solve problems we haven't been able to solve before, you know, or they're operating at a speed that we haven't been able to operate before. And you start looking at some of the wicked problems that could potentially be solved in the space. The other opposite end of that is you start looking at the potential threats, you know, and obviously, you know, some of the, you know, an area like information security or cybersecurity, you know, you start looking at, okay, what are the things we have in place today? And, you know, what are the potential risks that some of those could become disrupted? And I need to be thinking about what's the next generation and things like that. So some of those, I look for those trends of disruptive innovators that had the potential to really, you know, make a difference against some of our most challenging problems, but or introduce new threats that we need to be aware of as well. I look for, you know, people starting early proof of concepts, early pilots showing the potential of this thing. And that told me we need to get engaged. You know, we need to get engaged early. We need to get engaged and start doing, it might be, okay, are we involved in, you know, conferences that are starting to explore this area? Are we involved in, you know, working in and meeting with some of the early innovators in this space? Is there a potential for us to do a early proof of concept in a problem that we're working on? So those were the very early steps. And you're not talking about investing massive amounts of money, just as, you know, we talk about learning early in e-commerce or early in cloud computing or early in the beginning of the World Wide Web. You start seeing enough evidence that, hey, this is not going away. This has potential to be massively disruptive to our business model or massively disruptive to problems that we could go solve that we couldn't solve before. You know, those were some of these early signs that we started looking for, and then those first steps we started taking.
Okay. And speaking of signs of changing times and also cybersecurity that you brought up a little bit there, what's your current read of the quantum threat to traditional encryption schemes, and what should companies be doing about that?
Yeah, I think there's some massive changes coming about, you know, and, you know, first of all, obviously some of the encryptions and things like that now have the potential to be disrupted with quantum computing is something you got to be concerned about. So you got to be starting to think about, you know, what if, you know, bad players get a hold of this and what will they be able to do? Secondly, is you start looking at some capabilities like, you know, what if I can distribute a lot of my data, and because of quantum computing, I can bring it together only when it's needed in a more secure way and things like that. So you start thinking about, wow, what if I can do encryption at the data layer? So you start looking at, you know, almost doing a SWOT analysis, the strengths, the weaknesses, the opportunities, the threats of a technology like this. And it starts looking really, really interesting and maybe really, really scary, which is okay too. You know, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, e-commerce looked really scary to us too, because when you were selling truckloads of product, shipping them to big warehouses back and forth, the thought of shipping to every home in the US is scary, yeah. Right? It's disruptive. That's not how we're set up. So guess what happened over those 10 years that we basically talked with our CEO at the time, a great leader, A.G. Laffley, and he immediately got it. He turned to us and he said, we need to be wherever she wants to buy our product, right? And we said, absolutely. And so what happened over those next 10 years is not just learning about the technology, but changing the supply chain. P&G now has mix centers in the US that can ship to every home in the US within a day or two. Wow. You know, so suddenly you start thinking about all the things, because this isn't just a technology thing, this is a business model thing. Hmm. You know, so that's what I want to be thinking about when I'm thinking about, you know, things like quantum computing, not just, okay, is this an interesting technology? But where's it going to be disruptive to my business model? And how do I start preparing my business model, whether it's product, whether it's supply chain, all those things, to take advantage of the strengths and also protect against the threats potentially that could come from this?
Awesome. Okay, segueing back to your book a little bit here, I'm curious, yeah. What's the reception been like among fellow tech executives?
Yeah. So Waiting Is Not as Action just published. All the proceeds go to the Ovarian Cancer Alliance of Greater Cincinnati, so it's a great cause. And we've been selling products and selling books in every market around the world, which is really kind of exciting. You know, again, one of the advantages of taking advantage of this disruption in that, you know, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and all of them, you know, they will publish and print all around the world for you. But what's been really interesting for me is about midway through the book, writing, I got great insight from an executive who was doing a beta read for me. And he goes, Andy, this is really interesting because this isn't just for someone who's at their end of their career, but this is someone of like, how do you be successful in the Fortune 500 world? And if I'm trying to sell into the Fortune 500 world, this gives me great insights for that too. So suddenly I realized that I wasn't just writing this for, you know, folks that might be towards the end of their career and saying, hey, I don't want another traditional role, but how can I start doing something very different? This idea of a plural career or a gig career, whatever you want to call it. But I was also writing this for my boys who were just starting their career as well. So it's been getting a good reception at people that are just starting their journey on their career, but also getting a really strong reception at folks that still want to keep playing a critical role, but are figuring out a different way to maybe do that. So it's been, again, a lot of fun as we see it unfold, and obviously for a great cause. So it's kind of neat when the charity calls me and said, Andy, we just got this check for, you know, $500. What is this for? I said, oh, someone wanted a signed copy of the book. Oh. And they're going, they paid $500 for it? I said, well, they knew it was going to a good cause. So it's been a lot of fun doing that as well.
Man, that's great. Are there key points from your book that you think are particularly relevant or salient for a quantum computing adoption audience?
You know, this key theme of, you know, playing to win and really getting externally focused. I write an entire appendix on strategic partnerships. Mm-hmm. And how do you think about working with these incredible disruptive innovators that interestingly, you know, you think about, you know, someone like Zapata Computing, you know, raising, you know, $50, $60 million. P&G is not going to spend $50, $60 million right now on this. So it's like, I have to take advantage of you guys. You have better access to capital than I do in this space. You know, and that's a great insight of, you know, how do you partner with these disruptive innovators to really help them make breakthroughs and breakthroughs that are going to be beneficial to your business as well. So again, I have a whole appendix on this strategic partnership model and really creating these win-wins, because, you know, that's a huge win if you get a marquee client like a Procter & Gamble or a Walmart or someone working with you. But at the same time, if you can help them solve some of their wicked problems, they're all in.
Okay, awesome. Last question before we wrap things up here. Let's say that I am a C-level IT executive listening to the show. What would be the one takeaway you want them to take from this whole podcast about quantum computing and like what actions they should take to stop waiting?
Yeah, you know, I think the one thing, if I was in that C-suite role now and I'm hearing all this stuff going on around quantum computing, you know, I think the thing I would want them to take away from this podcast is, you know, now's the time. You know, so just like we saw with disruptive computing, whether it was the initial World Wide Web and all the business models that formed around that, the explosion in e-commerce and all the business models that formed around that, big data and analytics, cloud computing, all this, this is one of those. You know, this is not going away. This is the future. Now's the time to get involved. And you can sit there and play not to lose, or you can start playing to win. And you know, this will be one of those cases where waiting is not an action. So it's time to get going.
Awesome. Well, Andy, thank you so much. This has been really insightful and just an incredible episode with you.
Awesome. Excited to be part of it, and all the best.
And for those of you just listening, you can't see, he just tore off at 200 miles an hour in his vintage race car.
Exactly. So, hey, great talking with you today, and looking forward to it.
Hey, thanks for sticking around this far. As promised, I'm about to share what Andy said about how e-commerce and quantum computing are related, but first, I want to hear from you. I've made a super short survey for feedback from you. Hopefully the podcast is reaching the right audience and you all are getting benefit from it. Whether the answer to that is yes or no, check out the show notes and please fill it out. So now here's what Andy said.
And I was part of a small team that convinced our CEO at the time that this thing's not going away. Yes, it may be a very small portion of our business right now, but we got to start working on it now so that we're ready. If we didn't set that groundwork in 2003, 2004, there's no way you'd be seeing the acceleration at companies like Procter & Gamble that we're seeing today. And that was part of setting that groundwork, saying, okay, yes, we understand this is a small portion of our business today, but we've got to set that groundwork to be able to take advantage of these capabilities because it's coming. And I think that is the same case, you know, with quantum computing.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Start laying the groundwork for success today. So until next time, this is Ethan Hansen reminding you that a woodchuck, as much wood as a woodchuck could chuck.